Imperial fleet really work?
Thane put one broad hand against Ved's chest. Although it could look like a sober man helping his drunk friend to remain upright, Sienna sensed the veiled threat. Judging by the way Ved's smile faded, he got it too. In a low voice, Thane said, "Why don't you explain it to us?" Ved took a couple of steps back, out of Thane's reach before he replied.
"We attend the academy to become citizens of the Empire. The instructors don't like it when cadets from the same homeworld stay close to each other. It strengthens your ties to your own world. It weakens your commitment to the Empire."
"No, it doesn't." Sina protested, but he wasn't going to listen.
"They set you up."
Ved laughed again.
"They set you up so you'd hate each other, and you swallowed the bait."
Thane's eyes narrowed. "When we both were marked down on that assignment, you moved up to number one. At least until Jude Edavon overtook you 2 weeks later."
"You still think I did it? No way. I can't hack like that. Even Jude can't. Only the instructors have that kind of power. And if I were going to frame somebody for anything, the last people I'd go after would be the Office of Student Outcomes. My father told me all about them."
Ved's smile was both sloppy and smug.
"The fact that they were able to boost the rank of a general's son, I'm sure that was an extra incentive, but they did it mostly to make sure the two of you would stop clinging to each other. And you Jellukani idiots reacted exactly the way they thought you would, except you made it worse. They probably only meant for you two to bicker about it, not get all..."
Ved's hand made a wavy motion in the air.
"You didn't just get angry, you practically started hating each other. So, I guess that makes you two the perfect academy cadets. Again."
He seemed to lose interest then, lurching off toward the server droid to grab his next drink. Sienna felt as if all the shame Ved should have felt saying such things had settled on her instead. But she deserved to feel ashamed. She had lashed out at Thane for thinking the Academy was responsible, and he'd been right all along. The Academy's motives had differed, but still, he'd understood the basics. And she had let that drive her away from the last person she ever should have let go. Thane didn't know where to begin.
"Sienna."
She shook her head, though he didn't know what she was saying no to. Ved's story? The Academy's guilt? Thane being the first to speak? Anything? He put one hand on her shoulder, but she winced, as if his touch hurt. What could he say or do? So then, of course, the damned orchestra started tuning up again, and Sienna swiftly walked away to her next place in the dance. She never once looked back at Thane. He had little choice but to join in, but throughout the rest of the ball, Thane could think of nothing else. Sometimes he wanted to go back to the academy, go through every single corridor on every single floor, until he found that Office of Student Outcomes, then look for whoever worked there in the eyes and punch them in their faces, hard. Other times he felt more like locating a time machine so he could go back and tell his younger self not to be such a total idiot. He even considered what such a ploy on the Academy's part said about the Empire and the way it treated its officers. More than anything, though, he wanted to talk with Sienna alone. When the ball finally ended, Thane pushed through the crowds looking for Sienna's dark cloud of hair or the unique blue-violet shade of her dress. It was hard to see through all the fawning diplomats, laughing courtiers, and black-garbed military officers. And why was it so strange to remember that he was one of them? He saw Jude first. She was a head taller than most people in the room, and her vibrant orange gown stood out. As Thane walked closer, he could hear Jude saying, "As we have no curfew tonight or assigned duty tomorrow, this is an ideal occasion to explore the famous nightlife in this area of Coruscant. I've always been quite interested in the clubs here, especially the Crescent Star." Only Jude Edavon could make a night of partying sound like a science experiment. Thane had to smile at the thought, but then he saw Sienna, and everything else in his mind faded. "Actually, Jude," he said, seizing his chance, I was hoping Sienna and I might, spend some time catching up. Jude looked back and forth between the two of them, one eyebrow raised. Sienna took a deep breath. Thane and I should talk, if you don't mind, Jude.
Not at all. I'll be with the others.
Jude gestured toward a group of younger officers, several guys and a few girls who seemed to be waiting on her. After Jude was out of earshot, Thane said, "Which one of them is she leaving with?"
"Possibly all of them?"
Sienna turned to face him, her hands clasped in front of her in a gesture Thane recognized from the valleys. He wasn't sure of its significance, but he knew it was formal and important.
"Thane, I didn't believe the Academy to be responsible, and argued with you about it, and in effect challenged your honor. Such a transgression."
"No, you don't get to do that. This isn't on you, Sienna. At least not any more than it's on me. I guess we're both idiots together, but the real blame belongs to whatever monster at Student Outcomes did this to us." She blinked as if in shock. "They didn't intend for it to get this bad between us. We did that to ourselves."
Galling as it was to admit, Sienna was right. "Besides, think about it, Thane," she continued. "General Foslow probably bribed someone to do it, and Ved's lying to cover for his father."
That seemed possible, though Thane wasn't convinced. At the moment, it was irrelevant. "Either way, you were right about confronting the Academy instructors." It stung to confess how wrong he'd been, but this knowledge had crept up on Thane over the past few years, and it was past time for him to admit it both to Sienna and to himself. "We would have been expelled for sure. I shouldn't have lashed out at you about it. I should have understood you were upset."
Sienna was so determined to apologize. Thane didn't want to hear it.
"My point is neither of us did anything wrong. I'm so tired of being angry with you. Can't we finally let it go?"
She stood up straight and formal again.
"I'm willing to restore our friendship."
That statement sounded like it should be followed by some elaborate valley ritual of reconciliation, but Thane neither knew nor cared what that might be.
"Can't we just... talk?"
"Come on, Sienna. I don't care who should have known better or why the Academy did it or any of that. I just want my friend back. The rest doesn't matter."
It wasn't as easy for her to let it go, he knew. But he also saw the shadow of her smile when he talked about having her back.
"Where do we start?"
"We start with tonight." Going out to nightclubs would mean shouting over dance music, not to mention shaking off the countless guys who seemed likely to approach Sienna while she was in that dress. Returning to the Academy was no way to spend a free night. Neither Thane nor Sienna had any other ideas about what was available in the area, and rather than search, they wound up sitting on the terrace nearest the ballroom, on a low stone bench by the fountain, talking for hours as the cleaning droids whirred and buzzed around them. They did in fact start by talking about the ball itself, who and what they'd seen. Thane got to brag.
"I even danced with the princess from Alderaan. Nash is going to choke when he hears that. He's had a crush on her since he was 9.
Princess Leia? What was she like?"
"Even shorter than you," Thane replied, which got him a not very hard kick to the shin.
He mimed pain even as he continued more seriously.
"I don't know. It was only a dance, and she wasn't even paying that much attention. She wasn't being rude. It was more like she was distracted. I guess someone like her must have a lot on her mind."
Sienna opened up more when they talked about their future assignments. "Command track is an honor. Sometimes I think about having a ship of my own someday, and I just..." She shivered, and not only for show, Thane noticed the goose pimples on her arms. "But that means I'm not going to spend much time in single pilot fighters.
Not after the first few years, anyway."
"Which is criminal," Thane said. Nearby, a golden server droid used its 5 arms to vacuum the broken shards of a dropped glass. "You're a phenomenal pilot, Sienna. You should always be in the sky." He had forgotten how sly her smile could be. "I will be, only in a bigger ship." By the time it was nearly dawn, they were confiding in each other completely again. Saina showed him how she kept, in a small pouch, the leather bracelet that still bound her to her sister. "I always wondered," he said quietly, looking at the soft, worn braid. "It wasn't regulation, and you'd never break regulation, but I knew you'd never get rid of it either." "No." Saina's fingers closed softly around the small pouch, its rough woven fabric made Thane believe she might have fashioned it from a scrap of cloth taken from home. "Never." By then, the sky had begun to turn pink. The rush of sky traffic had never ceased throughout the night, but the ships came thicker and faster. Saina's bare feet rested on the stone bench. Her sparkly shoes lay empty on the terrace tiles. The server droids had given them final glasses of wine before settling into their night recharging stations. And as Thane drank the last swallow of his, he watched Saina yawn. As late as it was, as exhausted as they both were, she still looked beautiful. He wasn't going to act on that now. Maybe he wasn't going to act on it ever, given that they might be assigned to opposite sides of the galaxy within a couple months. Besides, their reunion was too new to ask for anything more. Later, Thane decided. Later he'd think about Saina and their futures. That night was enough on its own. "We should go to the transport," he said, getting to his feet. "Come on." Once Saina had stepped back into her shoes, Thane offered her his arm. She took it as she rose to her feet. Weary as they were, she expected nothing but small talk about how much sleep they would or wouldn't be able to get. Instead, Saina said very softly, "I'm so glad to have you back." "Later," he reminded himself more forcefully. "Me too." Chapter 8.
Today marks not an ending, but a beginning. Everything you've done during your 3 years at the Academy, and in some ways, everything you've done throughout your life until this moment, was all for one single purpose. Preparing you to become the best Imperial officers you can be. You have always been citizens of the Empire, but today, you become a part of the Empire in ways no civilians can ever fully understand. The uniforms you now wear serve as a symbol of the Empire's power, and your service makes that power ever greater.
Saina's heart sang with pride as she stood there amid the ranks of cadets. No, new officers. She wore a command track lieutenant's uniform in gray and black, new insignia gleaming in bright squares just below her collarbone. Her new assignment had been given to her that morning, only moments before the ceremony began. The sun shone bright in the pale Coruscant sky. Enormous red banners waved gently in the breeze, and she felt as if the future had been laid out before her like a velvet carpet, soft and plush, defining her path. Several rows back, the elite flight graduates wore black TIE fighter pilot gear. Thane found that kind of ridiculous. The armor was heavy and hot, too. It was designed to be worn in the upper atmosphere or outer space, not on the surface on a sunny day. And the same helmet that felt so necessary and so badass while he was flying? On the ground, it looked ridiculous. Still, his irritation with the armor didn't come close to his annoyance with the speaker's address. "He talks like the Empire just swallowed us whole. Plus, he keeps talking. Could he please shut up so I can go change into something else?" The best part of the ceremony, in his opinion, was the end, when he was able to find Saina in the crowd. Once he pulled off his helmet, she threw her arms around him in a hug. Thane could hardly feel it, thanks to the chest plate, but he grinned anyway. "So, where are you posted?" "A Star Destroyer. The Devastator." "Whoa, that's one of the top ships in the fleet." Thane was pleased for her, but not surprised. He'd never doubted that she'd go far. Saina's eyes shone with delight and hope. "And you? What's your posting?"
"I'm assigned to the defense fleet for a space station."
"Which one?"
"That's the weird part. I don't know. Apparently this station is brand new and still classified."
"Exciting," she said. "And I bet there's a good chance the Devastator will visit this new station."
"Yeah, sounds like it."
Thane couldn't help hoping. If they'd each been assigned to opposite sides of the Outer Rim, he would have had to accept that his path might never cross hers, at least in the line of duty. But she'd been on one of the most important ships in the fleet, and he'd already gathered that this new station was top of the line, the kind of place important ships would be docked, which meant he might see her again before long. And when they were together again, not as playmates or cadets, but as fellow officers and adults, then what? Thane wasn't sure, but he thought he'd like to find out.
"Keep me posted, all right?"
"You'd better send messages and hollows all the time." Cyana tried to make it sound as if she were teasing, but he could hear the real hope in her voice. "And maybe I'll even get to see you back home."
"Definitely."
Then, quickly, he bent and kissed her on the cheek. Cyana's full lips parted slightly in surprise and pleasure. Thane realized he should have done that a long time before. He wanted to say something to her, but the right words wouldn't come, so he stuck to the basics.
"Congratulations, Lieutenant Rhee."
"Congratulations to you too, Lieutenant Kyrell."
She held up one hand as she turned to go, but gave him a lingering look over her shoulder before she walked into the crowd. Thane watched her go. Even amid a throng of hundreds of students wearing variations on the same uniform, Cyana remained separate and unmistakable to him. Only when she'd passed out of sight did he turn away. Back home, he thought. Although he hoped to see Cyana before their next furlough, he liked the idea of being with her back on Jellocan. He'd planned to put off any postgraduate visit to his family as long as possible and hopefully forever. Now, however, he found himself willing to return at least once. It would be different if he and Cyana took the journey together. Maybe they could even see the fortress. Dust would have blown into their cave hideaway, but it wouldn't take much effort to make it nice again. Or they could travel down to Valentia together, as they'd always promised they'd do, but never had. 3 weeks into her service aboard the Devastator, Cyana finally stopped feeling like a cadet imposter and started feeling like a true Imperial officer. The change came the first day she was finally thrown into action against the rebels. They're firing back? She could hardly believe it. A tiny blockade runner trying to take on a Star Destroyer? It was beyond impossible. It was insane. Then again, weren't all the rebels insane?
"Close in," the bridge commander said. "Their power reserves must be nearly depleted by now. Let's pull them into the docking bay and end this."
Cyana activated the tractor beam, then looked up from the gleaming black console to witness the scene for herself. The small white form of the ship ahead was hardly more than a speck in the starscape, dwarfed by the desert planet beneath. View screens provided far more detail, but there was something fulfilling about watching the rebel ship's defeat with her own eyes. Once she would have taken that defeat for granted. The rebels were a ragtag bunch of malcontents, reduced to terrorist acts because they lacked either popular support or military might. Or so they had all believed until recently, when the rebels had struck at them from a hidden base. To the undying shame of whatever complacent Imperial officials were responsible, the rebels had actually won the engagement. Not only did the Empire have to bear that incomprehensible defeat, but it also had lost vital intelligence information. Although the specifics were not widely discussed, Cyana had gathered that the intel had to do with the plans for a new secret Imperial space station. That had to be the base Thane was assigned to. If these rebels had gotten away, would they have attacked that station, putting Thane's life at risk? Cyana's eyes narrowed as she stared at the rebel ship and thought, "You actually believed you could attack us and get away with it. You know better now, don't you?" The blockade runner continued to broadcast its protests about being on a diplomatic mission, but Cyana ignored that, as did everyone else on the bridge. With satisfaction, she saw the ship disappear from the windows, becoming only a green blip on her readouts. An officer nearby said, "Lord Vader has given the order to board the Tantive IV, sir." The captain nodded. "Excellent. They'll take the princess into custody in no time. Stand down on main laser cannons." Sienna nodded, swiftly inputting the commander's orders. She had to disguise her shock at the thought of Princess Leia of Alderaan as a rebel, a terrorist, and a traitor. But her father had long been a troublemaker in the Imperial Senate, mistaking his planet's importance for his own. Too bad his daughter had inherited his arrogance. Today, they'd shown her and every other rebel that they couldn't go up against the Empire without paying the price. One of the Tantive IV escape pods launched. Readout showed four lifeforms attempting to escape to the desert planet below. The pod was shot down easily. What could they have been thinking? Sienna wondered as she quickly routed the reports from the boarding parties. How could they ever expect to get away from a Star Destroyer when they were already trapped inside the docking bay? I guess they were too scared to think straight. They deserve everything that's coming to them, but I can't blame them for being scared. Another escape pod launched, rousing her from her thoughts. The officer next to Sienna muttered, "There goes another one." The captain seemed bored.
"Hold your fire. There's no life forms. They must have short-circuited."
Within moments, the escape pod was invisible against the yellow sands of the planet below. Shortly afterward, Sienna manually delivered copies of the Auxiliary Bridge's hard data files to the ISB Internal Affairs Officer on board. The Imperial Security Bureau liked to monitor all interactions with suspected rebel targets to ensure no one betrayed any lack of loyalty to the Empire through word or deed. On her way, she ran into Nash Windrider at the doorway to the main bridge lift. He was one of the few alumni of her class assigned to the Devastator, and while they hadn't been close there, due to that stupid rift between her and Thane, they knew each other well enough to count as friends now. Nash still wore his hair long, though tightly braided in the back per regulations. "Don't tell me," he stage whispered to her as the lift doors slid open as they walked inside. "You're running an errand to make sure you don't get sent to that broiling lump of sand down there." "Tatooine," she pretended to correct him. The lift began its swift ascent, the glass panels in its doors showing them layer after flickering layer of the vast Star Destroyer. "I take it that's where you're headed?" "No, and thank goodness. Going down there in stormtrooper armor's as good as being baked alive." The lift would reach the main bridge within a few moments, so Sienna took that chance to say something that needed to be said to Nash in private. Gently, she began, "I wanted to say, I'm sorry about your princess. You must feel so betrayed." Nash's grin faded. He drew himself up to his full lanky height and clasped his hands behind his back. "Princess Leia can only have been misled by her courtiers. I feel sure that a thorough investigation will clear her of any real wrongdoing." "Of course, I should have thought of that." Sienna didn't know if she believed such an easy explanation was plausible, but Nash knew more about the princess than she did. Maybe he was right. The lift doors slid open and Nash stepped out. "Until later," he said, turning away from her to return to his duty station. Sienna wished she hadn't said anything about the princess. It wasn't Nash's fault if one of his planet's senators had turned out to be a traitor. She hoped the Internal Affairs Officer would feel the same way. Sienna had only been to the main bridge once before, on a brief orientation tour of the ship the day she'd arrived. So the sight still awed her. The impossibly long corridor, the enormous view screen, the countless monitors all whirring and blinking on the lower level as senior staffers worked furiously in the data pits. It was the heart of the Devastator, the soul of the machine. Quickly, she turned her attention to Captain Ronadam, who was sitting at his station in the unique white jacketed uniform of the ISB.
"Sir, the data packets, as requested."
Ronadam took the packets without even glancing back at her. His focus was only for whatever long lines of text were scrolling down his monitor. Sienna could not leave the main bridge without being dismissed, so she stood at attention, waiting.
"You're being lax in your protocols, Ronadam," said a dry, crisp voice behind her. "Fortunately, the young lieutenant here follows procedure and has better manners."
Sienna lit up as she turned and recognized Grand Moff Tarkin himself in the form of a hologram, flickering in gray-green light. He looked at Sienna with some interest.
You seem to know me, Lieutenant, but I doubt we've served together before. Who are you?
Lieutenant Sienna Ree, LP-888, graduate of the most recent class of the Royal Academy and native of Jellucan, sir. Wait until I tell Thane I saw Tarkin again.
The Grand Moff nodded politely.
Jellucan, on the Outer Rim, yes? I was there for its annexation into the Empire.
A response was not required, but it wasn't forbidden either, and Sienna couldn't resist.
You were, sir. I met you that day, right after the ceremony, when I was just a little girl.
Tarkin's angular face studied her for a long moment, and then, to her astonishment, he said,
"The two children sneaking around the shuttle grounds, were you one of those?"
She had heard tales of Tarkin's sharp memory, that he never forgot a favor or a slight, but the proof made her smile.
"Yes, sir. You asked me that day if I'd like to serve the Empire when I grew up, and here I am."
"Well, well."
Tarkin put his hands behind his back, clearly pleased with himself and with her.
"The power of diplomacy in action."
"The boy with me that day just graduated from the Academy, too, at the top of the elite flight track. Now he's Lieutenant Thane Kyrell."
Tarkin's smile was thin, but unmistakable.
"Apparently I should recruit on Jellucan more often. I shall make a point of keeping up with you both."
Sienna struggled to maintain correct military composure, but she felt sure her delight showed on her face.
Grand Moff Tarkin didn't seem to mind, however. As the hologram faded out, he nodded at her, as close to friendliness as any superior officer would ever show toward a mere lieutenant. If he'd remembered that incident with the Lambda-class shuttle all those years later, he'd definitely remember to look up her records and Thane's. Maybe Tarkin would be more than their inspiration for joining the Imperial Starfleet. Maybe he'd even turn into a mentor.
Capturing a rebel ship and winning praise from a Grand Moff before lunchtime? Sienna grinned.
This day was turning out to be spectacular.
Thane hadn't realized exactly how enormous the Death Star was until the first time he had flown his TIE fighter on patrol. Immediately, he had had to adjust the thrusters for the kind of takeoff more common within a planetary atmosphere than on a space station, because the Death Star's enormity gave it heavy gravitational pull. Just the thought of that made Thane grin. He'd never imagined building something that colossal was even possible. Now the space station had become his home, and already he dreaded the day he'd be assigned somewhere else. The Death Star was meant to function as a world of its own, which meant it had creature comforts most other military postings didn't. Decent food, rec areas, cantinas with latest model bartender droids, commissaries with selections of treats and luxuries, albeit at a stiff price. Although Thane lived in a communal barracks, apparently there were enough private bunks that most people could expect to receive one within 3 to 6 months. Usually you had to make Lieutenant Commander to live in that kind of luxury. To be able to enjoy such a comfortable posting and have the thrill of deep spaceflight every day, that went beyond Thane's wildest dreams. So did the message he received that morning.
"You're coming here today?"
he repeated as he looked down at Sienna's face on the small screen.
"As in, now?
See how we're communicating without a delay? The Devastator should dock within the hour."
Her eagerness shone through the screen. Thane imagined his did too.
"Will you have any free time?"
"Yeah, definitely. I already finished my patrol for the day."
As for the next day, well, trading duty shifts wasn't against rules if you got approval first. He'd fly any shift for anyone if it meant he could spend the whole day with Sienna.
"We could go to one of the cantinas. Catch up."
"Nash can't wait to see you either."
"Right. Definitely. Of course."
Nash might have been one of his best friends, but Thane had never been less interested in hanging out with him. Fortunately, Nash was savvy enough to know when to excuse himself, Thane hoped.
"And I want to see Jude. She's on board, isn't she?"
"Yeah. Jude Edavon's assigned to the Death Star, but I haven't run into her once.
This place is the size of a moon. It's like she's halfway across the planet from me."
When Sienna's face fell, Thane hastily added,
But when you tell her you're coming, she'll find her way to you. Count on it.
You will too, right?
You'd better believe it, he said, smiling like an idiot. Maybe I didn't look like a total idiot, Thane thought several hours later, as he went through his secondary duty shift as a maintenance mechanic. Every pilot had to be able to maintain and repair all single and dual pilot craft, and by then, twin ion engines were as familiar to Thane as his own hands. So he was able to go through his checklist, hitting every point, while still allowing his mind to race. She was smiling too. So that's a good sign, right? He didn't ask himself what it was a good sign of. The excitement he felt at the thought of seeing Sienna again remained something he preferred not to examine or name. All he knew was that he hadn't dreamed of seeing her again so soon, and yet now, even another day seemed like too long to wait. The Devastator's already here. Sienna's on the Death Star right now. Why did I have to pull this stupid shift? I traded so I'd have tomorrow free, but what if Sienna can't get time off then? Thane told himself to stop worrying about it. He took a deep breath and got back to work on the TIE fighter in front of him. The control panel actually needed some new wiring, a task detailed enough to keep him occupied for a while. Just as he put the panel plate back in place, however, he heard the announcement.
All hands in Sector 417 to the auxiliary docking doors.
That was his sector. Luckily, Thane already stood nearby, so he was able to get into formation first, right in the front line. His mechanic's jumpsuit bore a few grease stains, but that wasn't inappropriate for the middle of a work shift. Nonetheless, he felt shabby compared with the many officers around him in either officers' uniforms or gleaming stormtrooper armor. Probably the commander wouldn't notice, though. He strutted in front of them as he announced,
"As of today, the Death Star is fully operational, and it is the will of the Emperor that we demonstrate its power to the entire galaxy."
A few cheers went up from the group. Thane clapped a couple of times. He guessed they were going to bring the station close enough to planetary orbit for the populace to see it. That would wow anyone. He'd felt the main engines at work, so obviously the station had traveled somewhere important. Maybe Coruscant. The docking bay doors slid open. Although Thane fully understood the force fields that kept atmosphere in and the hostile chill of space out, he still felt a moment's awe when he looked out on the vast darkness beyond. Slowly, as the doors opened, a world appeared. The soft blue sphere seemed to shine with its own light, and as always, Thane thought about how beautiful yet fragile planets looked from that distance.
"Behold the planet Alderaan," the commander said.
"Nash's home." Thane couldn't help grinning. What luck to be near that world while the Devastator was visiting the station. How many times had Nash promised to show Thane all the sights? It had seemed like no more than a dream, but now Thane might actually get to take a look at Alderaan for himself if he could wrangle the free time. He found himself remembering every story Nash had told him about the best places to go, the incredible, natural beauty his world was said to contain. Where should we go first? Cloud-shaped falls? The Issa Tabeth rainforest?
"As some of you will know," the commander said, "Alderaan is represented in the Imperial Senate by a member of the Organa ruling family. However, it has been discovered that the senator, her father, and we believe the entirety of the upper echelons of Alderaanian government have been secretly financing and supporting the Rebel Alliance."
It took a moment for the words to sink in. Thane couldn't be sure he heard correctly. How could the royal family of Alderaan be mixed up in terrorism? His cynical nature told him nobody was too pure or noble to be corrupted. But it also told him people who benefited from the status quo rarely tried to change it. The commander went on.
"This station has been chosen to send a message to the entire galaxy. We shall demonstrate now and for all time the Empire's strength is supreme. Long may the Emperor rule! Long may the Emperor rule!"
shouted all the officers standing at attention, Thane included. He hardly paid attention to the words, which by now were so familiar as to be rote. His mind was still trying to make sense of what he just heard.
Then a deep vibration in the core of the station rippled through the decks, different and more powerful than any Thane had sensed in it before. His hair stood on end, though he didn't know whether that was from fear or the ionization of the atmosphere. "What's happening?" he wondered. And then the Death Star blasted Alderaan, and an entire world exploded before him. Chapter 9. In shock, almost numb, Sienna thought, "Look through my eyes." She was supposed to let Wynette see the terrible as well as the beautiful. That meant Sienna had to show her this. On the view screen, fragments of the planet Alderaan scattered in a thousand directions, all the pieces glowing with the heat of their world's death. Sienna thought of the billions of people who had just died before her eyes, and thought she might begin to cry. But then she saw the officer next to her on the auxiliary assignment station. Nash Windrider had gone so pale she thought he might faint. He was a native of Alderaan. His entire family, every place he'd ever been, his home, had just been obliterated before his eyes for disloyalty. Instantly, Sienna realized that if Nash did faint or cry, or show any visible sign of emotion, it would be seen as a protest. He would be thought guilty of the same treason as the Organas, and could be thrown in the brig, if not stripped of his commission on the spot. She couldn't help anyone else, so she would help Nash. Reaching out with one hand, Sienna touched Nash's arm to steady him. He responded by clutching her fingers and squeezing so tightly it hurt, but she did not pull away. Instead, she watched as Nash forced himself to breathe deep, even breaths, holding on to her hand as if it were a tow line to bring him to shore. "To home," Sienna nearly thought, but she caught herself in time. In the aftermath of the blast, Sienna walked Nash toward the lift that would take him back to the Devastator's docking bay so he could board the ship, go to his barracks, and perhaps be alone. Nash said nothing the entire time. He didn't even make eye contact with Sienna before walking through the lift doors. In the last second before they shut again, she saw him lean heavily against the wall of the lift, as if otherwise he might fall. At least she had a few hours free to collect her thoughts and an old friend to talk things through with. No, it wasn't the old friend she'd most hoped to see, but still, a welcome face. "Naturally, I understood the cannon's full potential," Jude said as she and Sienna sat on one of the small observation decks before a long line of windows. "The superlaser is fueled by an array of giant kyber crystals, which gives it nearly unlimited power. But I had thought it would be used to break up asteroids for mining purposes, or uninhabited worlds, not this." Sienna glanced around to see if they were being overheard. "Jude, do you think what we saw today, what the Death Star did, is there any justification for that? Can there be?" Instead of answering right away, Jude sat very still, considering. Sienna had always liked that about her friend, the calm, reasoned way Jude worked things through. When they were young cadets, sometimes her gravity led her roommates to tease her, but now Sienna was grateful for it. "Even though I've only been in active service for a few weeks," Jude finally said, "it has already become evident to me that the Rebel Alliance is a far larger and more dangerous group than official broadcasts have ever acknowledged. We do not operate as a peacetime military. Our preparations are more appropriate for a time of war." Sienna had already sensed some of that for herself, but when Jude put it in those words, everything crystallized. The threat posed by the Rebel Alliance had become very real. Jude continued, "The Organas are guilty of treason, but most of the citizens were not." At least it was quick, Sienna thought. But the rationalization sounded hollow even inside her head. She imagined herself as a child, looking upward, seeing the slate-colored sky turn red, and knowing for one sickening moment that it could only be the end. The fear the children of Alderaan would have known. The horror. But it is incorrect to think of what happened to Alderaan as punishing the populace, Jude said, becoming more brisk. The only justification for such an extreme act is that this alone is capable of putting down an even more severe threat. The rebels must be reckless, even foolish, to attempt to conquer the entire Imperial fleet. So how can they be made to see reason, to understand the limitations of their power and the inevitability of the Empire's victory? Nothing but a demonstration on this scale could ever accomplish that. Surely now the rebels see that their goals are hopeless and their tactics unwise. We'll be safe from war now. The billions of people who died today may have saved countless lives through their sacrifice. That had to be true. No terrorist cell in the galaxy, no matter how zealous or bloodthirsty, could believe it had the power to defeat the Empire now. But that sacrifice was one the inhabitants of Alderaan had never chosen to make. Jude sighed and stared down at her drink for a long moment. For some reason, the way the light fell or the lost expression on Jude's face, she looked younger to Sienna, like the girl she'd been when they'd met more than 3 years earlier. Her immaculately pressed and tailored uniform seemed like a costume for a child playing dress-up. Maybe Sienna also felt too young, too new to go to war. No doubt everyone felt that way at first. Sienna said, "So what happened today, as many people as were lost, even more would die in a massive galactic war." "Exactly," Jude nodded. "Think of the billions who perished in the Clone Wars. But by ending the war now, before it truly begins, the Death Star will save more lives than it took." That was a hard thing to think about. The kind of dark calculus Sienna had hoped would never be required of her outside command ethics class. Yet now she had to face it and do her duty. If only the Empire had not been forced to take such dramatic action. If only the Rebel Alliance had never arisen from whatever mixture of discontent and arrogance fueled its leaders. These terrorists had gambled on the proposition that the Empire would never strike back. Now at last, they had been proved wrong, but Sienna wondered whether their leaders would ever take responsibility for the horrible measures necessary to stop this rebellion, this war, before the entire galaxy had been plunged into chaos. Probably not. The rebellion had started this, even provoked it. Sienna felt better now that she understood whom to blame. An announcement sounded echoing from the speakers as officers looked up.
"Attention! The Devastator will depart from the station at the beginning of the next duty shift. All personnel should be on board and prepared for new orders."
Oh, no! Sienna didn't want to leave Jude just when her friend was helping the world make sense again. The last thing Nash needed was a new and more demanding duty shift, instead of some time to collect himself. And she hadn't even laid eyes on Thane, much less.
"I doubt the Devastator will be gone for long," Jude said. "Word has it Lord Vader intends to remain until the current crisis has been resolved. The Devastator is his flagship, so you would undertake only a limited number of missions without him."
Of course. Sienna's spirits brightened. Whatever mission awaited the Devastator couldn't last more than a couple of weeks, not without Darth Vader on board. "Then I'll see you again soon." They hugged goodbye quickly before Sienna hurried out into the corridor. She hardly took in the activity around her. The station's enormity failed to awe. Already, her mind was on the future, helping Nash through the next few days, returning for Lord Vader. And it seemed likely the Devastator would visit this station often, so she'd have plenty of chances to visit Jude. She'd be back to see Thane so quickly, it would be as if she'd never gone. Thane stared at the screen of the communications monitor, willing it to light up with a response from Sienna. Only blackness stared back. He knew she was probably on the Devastator, maybe on duty. How could anyone keep going after witnessing the murder of an entire planet? But Thane had continued standing at attention along with the rest, a fact that amazed him more with every passing moment. "We killed billions of people. We slaughtered billions. And afterward, we were expected to applaud?
Alderaan had been Nash's homeworld. If Thane was sickened by what he'd just seen, how must Nash be feeling?
The guy had to be at the point of collapse. Thane didn't send a message to him, however. He knew the communications record might be looked over by the internal affairs officer, and any call to or from an Alderaanian would automatically be suspect. For his own sake, Thane didn't care. He knew how to choose his words carefully so the listener would hear what had to remain unspoken. It was a skill most people cultivated at the Academy. But Nash had to be furious, and in his grief and rage, he might say something that would incriminate him. No, Thane would have to reach out to Nash later, when it was safer. Anyway, it was Sienna he needed to talk to. She'd always been his touchstone. If he were with her, he thought, he wouldn't feel so nauseated and angry. He'd feel as if he could breathe again. The communications monitor lit up, and Thane's spirits rose for the split second it took him to realize the message wasn't from Sienna. Instead, it was his company commander, ordering them to report for duty immediately. "Dantooine," he repeated to one of his fellow officers as they boarded the troop transport. "That's in the middle of nowhere." The place was nearly as obscure as Jellucan. "That's the whole point," said the other officer as she climbed the entry ramp. "Where else could the rebels hide?" They'd better hide, he thought. Now that the galaxy had learned what this space station could do, surely nobody would rise up against the Empire again. At least Thane had a couple of moments before boarding was complete to record a message, one Sienna could listen to whenever she got off shift. "Bad news. Some of us are being shipped out on a last-minute patrol. That's only going to take a day or two, but I don't know how much longer the Devastator's going to be docked on the... station." The words Death Star were harder for him to say now that the death was real. "I really hope I get to see you," he said, willing her to hear how deeply he meant it. "If not, next time on Jellucan, I promise. So you have to promise too, all right?" Kyrell out. Probably he should have sent Nash a message as well, but he still had no idea what to say. During the Trooplander's voyage to Dantooine, Thane kept wondering what to do for Nash, but he could think of nothing more useful than sitting his friend down with a bottle of Corellian brandy. Once they reached the planet, scans picked up evidence of a rebel base fairly quickly. Before Thane could get into battle armor, however, word came that the base was deserted. They'd do a sweep for intel, but no more than that. Sounded like they'd come a long way for nothing. But then, the Trooplander arrived at the abandoned base in the heart of Dantooine's gloomy Badlands, and Thane saw not some ramshackle hangar or scrubby smuggler's den, but the remnants of a real military organization. They could have had dozens of small starfighters in this area alone, he thought as he scanned the vast enclosure. Data scrolling past on his screen told him the installation had also held dozens of droid charging ports, sophisticated communication technology that would allow for near-instantaneous cross-galactic information transfer, and bunks for several hundred rebels. And there seemed to be at least a dozen structures similar to that one. Plus, they found evidence of extensive digging underground, so apparently the rebels had at one point planned to expand the base. This was no small band of malcontents. The Rebel Alliance was an army. No, their fighting force was nowhere near the scale of the Empire's might, but Thane had taken enough tactics classes at the Academy to know that an enemy didn't have to be your equal. As long as its forces reached a certain critical mass, they had the power to cause real damage. It looked to him like the rebellion was nearly there. His usual train of thought about the rebels began. They're terrorists. They're thugs. The Empire has its flaws, but so did the Republic these guys worship. You can't trust power no matter what. It doesn't really matter who's in charge. He'd thought he was being so worldly and wise. Now, with the blaze of Alderaan's destruction still glowing in his mind, Thane knew how hollow his rationalizations had been. Terrorism could never be the answer, but as of that day, the Empire was as guilty of acts of terror as the Rebel Alliance was, if not more. His tour of duty post-graduation was 5 years. After that, technically, Thane could resign his commission and take whatever work he chose, but the vast majority of Imperial officers remained in service until they hit mandatory retirement age or died, whichever came first. He'd always figured he would be a lifer. Now it felt like he couldn't wear that uniform another 5 minutes. How many times had he said he'd stay in the Imperial Starfleet just so he'd get to fly the greatest ships in the galaxy? The words sounded so callow now. Juvenile, even. "You don't really want to walk out," Thane told himself as he continued taking readings, his expression carefully impassive. "What you've seen today proves we're on the brink of galactic war. They need you." But when he thought of they, he wasn't imagining the Emperor and his admirals needing him. He imagined protecting his fellow troops, the people around him he'd already begun to think of as friends, and Nash, and Sienna. Although the Devastator had left the Death Star behind, the Star Destroyer's crew had been instructed to remain linked to the station's data feeds. The designated view screens were slightly to the left of Sienna's station, so from the corner of her eye she could see the febrile surface of Yavin, an immense red gas giant. Other screens showed one of the world's moons, Yavin 4, apparently the real location of the Rebel base. So they sent Thane away to Dantooine based on bad intel. For nothing. She longed to talk with him about the terrible events of the past couple of days. Talking with Jude had helped steady Sienna, but she still couldn't sleep. Over and over again, in her mind's eye, she saw Alderaan exploding. Now she might be about to watch the death of a second world. "But this is a military target," she assured herself. "No civilians will be hurt." That explanation would make sense to her eventually. At the moment, her gut ached at the thought of seeing another planet's destruction. It was too soon after Alderaan. Her nerves were raw. The rebels realized their doom, and they fought back, but in the most absurd way possible. "Unbelievable," muttered a commander standing near her duty station. "The rebels sent a handful of starfighters to target the Death Star? That little uprising must be on its last legs, if that's all the power they can muster." "It's uninhabited," she reminded herself. "The only people there are members of the rebellion, the ones who are trying to start a war. They chose their path willingly. This is what war means." Yet she thought of the animals that live there, small, innocent creatures, and even the trees. One monitor showed X-Wing fighters racing through a trench, with TIE fighters in pursuit. She wondered why they had even sent the TIEs out against such a pitiful attack. Then again, even minor damage to the station would have to be repaired. The ships zoomed past at such speed that the firefight was out of sight again in moments. Maybe another camera would pick it up. Instead, a short time later, she saw an X-Wing and a clunky old freighter headed back toward Yavin 4 at top sublight speed. Sienna reported, "Sir, the rebel ships are flying away from the Death Star." "Track them," her commander said. "We will want to provide the most complete report possible for Grand Moff Tarkin." She continued logging every data packet that arrived from the Death Star, important or incidental. The auxiliary bridge continued its buzz of activity, but voices dropped and tasks slowed. Sienna knew everyone was waiting for the moment Yavin 4 would explode. Nausea welling inside, she attempted to brace herself for the sudden blazing light, when instead every screen connected to the Death Star went black. Instantly, simultaneously, Sienna realized the stream of data flowing from the station had stopped too. "Did the circuits fail?" someone said, checking out those monitors. He thought the screens themselves were at fault. She knew better. "The Death Star's gone silent, sir," she reported. "No incoming data." Her commander's face took on a strange expression, both confused and angry. "That's impossible, Lieutenant. The rebels have created some form of interference, or those fighters were sent to knock out the station's communications." X-Wing fighters couldn't do that to a space station the size of the Death Star, could they? But the only alternative was unthinkable.
Chapter 10.
Voices echoed through the abandoned rebel base on Dantooine, which had become, for the time being, a makeshift Imperial station. Groups of officers huddled around, some still in full landing armor, but most by then wearing only pieces of plating. Although their troop commander remained in charge, for hours no orders had been given to anyone but communications officers. There was nothing for them to do but wait and be afraid. Thane paced the length of the hall, which seemed to have been blasted from solid rock, making it feel a bit as if they were huddling in a cave. The pieces of information they'd been able to gather so far were contradictory, confusing, and ominous. Some said the Death Star had been destroyed. Others claimed it was damaged and unable to communicate. Still, others said the bad news had to be false. A ploy meant to coax the rebels out of hiding so they could be more efficiently slaughtered. Most of the soldiers in the room seemed to believe the last scenario, which had led to a lot of cursing and big talk about how, when they were in charge, they'd never initiate an action like that without properly informing and preparing everyone down the chain of command. A few others protested, saying that spies could be anywhere. If even a member of the Imperial Senate as illustrious as Princess Leia Organa could turn traitor, anyone could. So this big diversion had to be kept secret until the last possible moment. Not everyone was convinced, though. Thane had exchanged glances with a handful of others who remained tense and silent. The Death Star can't have been lost. It would take a dozen Star Destroyers and attack cruisers to make any impact on a station that size. The Rebel Alliance is clearly more powerful than our superior officers let us know, but if they had a fleet that large, they would have provoked direct action before now. That part of his analysis felt rock solid to Thane. However, the rest was less certain. If the Death Star has been damaged, how badly? It's the size of an entire moon, so how can all the communication systems be down? And why wouldn't the ships docked there be able to respond either? If the rebels had attacked the Death Star with a fleet capable of causing real damage, the big Imperial ships would have been launched. They would have gone into battle. Thane leaned against the rough-hewn stone wall of the rebel base, canteen of nutritive milk in one hand. He thought of the Devastator in all its majesty and power, and he imagined its laser cannons blasting the rebel fleet to shreds. He pictured it over and over. The shards of metal, the spinning debris, the brief pulses of flame before they were snuffed out by the vacuum of space. If he imagined the Devastator winning, he didn't have to imagine what else might have happened during the battle he envisioned. To the ship, to Nash Windrider, or to Sienna. After a few hours at her post, Sienna's ears rang with the squeals of badly filtered transmissions. Her head swam with the endless amounts of data she had to process fast. For now, she had to give her ship and her empire everything she had. The Devastator's senior officers were in conference, as they had been for what seemed like hours. If any of them knew the reason behind the Death Star's sudden, terrifying silence, they had not yet shared it with the crew. For the time being, Sienna could do no more than continue to sort through the endless data packets sent from the Death Star before it went quiet. Many of these contained no useful information whatsoever, but until they had a full explanation, she could afford to ignore nothing. When she recognized Jude's number on one packet, she opened it immediately. She didn't care whether this one was important or not. Sienna needed to know what Jude had been doing before the Death Star became damaged or infiltrated or whatever had gone so horribly wrong. But Jude's data was important. Sienna read a report from Jude Edovan to her superior officer and all local commanders, in which Jude explained that her analysis had shown the rebel attack with small starfighters did in fact pose a threat to the Death Star. She'd found a flaw nobody else had suspected, something to do with an exhaust port, and had sensed a weakness where everyone else saw invulnerability. Although the likelihood of a direct hit is remote, Jude had written, the consequences could be highly destructive to the station, even fatal. If anyone had sent a response to Jude's warning, Sienna had not yet found it.
Fatal? To the station? To the Death Star?
No. Jude must have meant that only the officers would be killed in some resulting small explosion. That made far more